Hello and welcome to Ultimate Medical's Positioning 365 Beyond Seating. My name is Marianne Girardi. I am a physical therapist, resident certified assistive technology professional, and a clinical education specialist here at Ultimate Medical. We are excited to welcome our newest clinical education specialist, Kristen Czat, to the Ultimate Medical team. She will be joining me in hosting this podcast going forward. Kristen, please tell us about yourself.
Sure. Thanks so much, Marianne. So my name is Kristen Czat, and I am a physical therapist by background. Prior to joining the Ultimate Medical team, I have 13 years of clinical experience, primarily in adults with neurologic injury, but more specifically, my area of expertise is individuals with spinal cord injury. During my clinical practice, I was a mentor for a neurologic residency program and also adjunct faculty for a local doctor of physical therapy program where I live. I am a RESNA certified assistive technology professional and seating and mobility specialist, and I also hold my APTA board certification in neurologic physical therapy. And I'm so excited to have joined the Ultimate Medical team this year. So thank you so much, Marianne, for the warm welcome. So now we're going to go ahead and introduce our guest. So today we're going to speak with Amy Gellert. She has been a PT since 2018 with a focus on pediatrics and young adults. As a PT, she taught at Cal State Los Angeles and has worked with California's Children's Services in a medical outpatient setting. She works with students as a school-based physical therapist in California's Inland Valley, and she is an equipment enthusiast and has found that using the right prescribed adaptive equipment in schools greatly increases the safety and comfort of students and staff and allows for a higher level of independence for her students to participate with their peers.
Well, welcome, Amy. Is there anything else you want to share with the group before we get started?
No, I'm just happy to be here. You know, it's great that you guys offer these education courses because I think that it's another platform for us to, you know, hear from our peers and, you know, learn a few new perspectives and new ways to do things. So I think it's a great service you guys provide. Thank you for having me on.
Awesome, Amy. Well, we're so thrilled to have you with us today. In this episode, we're going to be delving into two key themes. We're going to discuss advocacy and access in the context of supported standing and really just complex rehab technology in general in our pediatric population. We'll explore the advocacy journey that therapists embark on, particularly those working with clients with supported standing and complex rehab technology needs. I know when I began my career 13 years ago, I was very unaware and honestly a bit unprepared for this advocacy journey that I was about to embark on as a physical therapist. But I quickly realized that advocacy to allow my clients the ability to access the technology and services they needed was a foundational role as a physical therapist. So, Amy, we're curious about your role as an advocate in the school system. Could you describe how you advocate for CRT, particularly in terms of, you know, providing access to supported standing for your clients?
Yeah, definitely. So I think it all goes back to kind of the ICF model where you're looking from the patient's or the student's perspective. You, as a trained professional, you are analyzing you know, their functions, their body structures, their environment, all the factors that go into the whole picture of who this person is and what they want to do. And, you know, and also as a trained professional, you kind of can see areas that they could grow in that they didn't know they could do too. I'm currently working in the school setting. So working as a school-based physical therapist, the emphasis of my practice is on the students' access to their education. So that's different than the medical-based where you're focusing on, you know, correcting all the symptoms of the disability. In school-based, it's more of a focus on how the disability affects their educational process and their access to their education. So this means like access to curriculum, participation with peers, access to their environment, including their safety. So really in this setting, like a good piece of equipment allows that student to be supported fully to kind of, you know, adapt and compensate for their physical limitations to allow their personality and, you know, them as a person to really shine through so that they can participate with their peers and really gain from the educational setting, you know, participation in the curriculum, such as you know, standing to complete things at the board, standing to get your food from, you know, the cafeteria line, or to eat your food, you know, to play basketball, things like that, that student really wants to do and has the drive to do, but their physical limitation stops them from doing it. So the right piece of equipment many times can help them to, you know, fill that gap and to be able to participate better. So advocacy in the school-based setting is learning about that student, really deeply listening to find out what they want to do, what they need to do to complete their schooling path, and then being able to help them kind of emphasize their voice or to speak up for those things that they want to do. Now, of course, as a professional, you're balancing that out with, you know, contraindications and working with the medical team to make sure that these things are physically possible for that student. But at the same time, it's being that person that they can come to with these concerns and being able to take that in mind and weigh that, looking at the environmental and the personal factors, the body functions, everything in the ICF model that would allow that student to participate in their chosen activity. Yeah, and then sometimes finding different ways for them to participate if it isn't the way that they thought that they would, finding an alternative method for them to participate as well. Everything adapting it to their level, of course.
It sounds like you spend a lot of time really getting to know your students and what their wants and goals are and taking the time to help them achieve them. I saw that recently you were a driving force in an advocacy effort that had a tremendous impact on one of your students' lives. You were able to help him reach his goals within the school setting. Can you share a little bit about that with us?
Oh, yeah. So so I recently had a patient, a student, who when I first met him, you know, told me that he wanted to walk. He hadn't been walking for many, many years. I don't think he'd ever walked independently. And he was working the last 2 years before I met him on taking steps in a gait trainer. So his goal was to walk across the graduation stage. And we had, you know, a short amount of time to do that. So due to the complexity of his disability, he was still pretty dependently being propelled and assisted with walking itself. So fortunately, we started doing a standing program to increase his strength in hopes that we could have him at least upright during the graduation. And then we found, very, very luckily, we found the right piece of mobile stander that allowed him to not only go from sit to stand, so that he could be sitting for part of the graduation ceremony and then standing when he needed. But it was also mobile, which allowed him to propel across stage to receive his diploma. And so I've never met a student before that was so passionate about his goal. This is the first one. Usually when I see the look of determination in a person's eyes, it's the parents who are wanting their kids to walk. This student himself had that determination. He had that look in his eyes when I first spoke with him. And so it was a long journey. We worked together for 2 years on standing and, you know, motor control, strengthening, before we even, you know, got the piece of equipment that would allow him to go across stage. And none of it goes to waste. You know, if we weren't able to go across stage, all of that would have contributed to his, you know, functioning and his long-term strength and coordination. However, with the right piece of equipment, we were able to take everything that he had worked on and assist him in an independent transition to standing, and then assist him in independently propelling across the stage. So basically, we took his original goal of standing and walking across the stage to basically doing the same motions, but in a supported fashion, in a safe fashion for himself and for the staff. And he was still able to, you know, go across the stage actually as the first student at that school, their first graduation, to accept his diploma and surprise his parents too, because they didn't know. He was an adult student, obviously, And he hadn't told them anything about it. This was all him and all his hard work and his determination with my assistance, you know, of course, to get the treatments done and to be a guiding force and a coach for his accomplishment. But it definitely took his determination to make this happen. And so, you know, it was a process of helping him understand where he was at first, because he didn't know if you haven't had, you know, consistent PT throughout your life and you have a diagnosis and you aren't able to walk and you have a complex medical situation, generally, you can't just stand up and walk. So it was a process of getting to know him, working with him, helping him to understand his own medical needs, allowing him to understand that fully, and then to temper his expectations and goals, but then also doing, you know, my due diligence in being a good therapist and finding different solutions to help him to meet his goals. And we came to a really good point of having the right piece of equipment. I mean, that was the key to the whole thing, finding the right piece of equipment so that we could take his hard work, assist him with the piece of equipment, work with the school themselves to make sure that, you know, that there was the accessibility to the stage, working with the staff to make sure that they had the proper body mechanics, working with the student constantly to make sure he had the endurance and the strength to complete such a feat. And then working, of course, with our equipment vendors to find the right piece of equipment, to size it perfectly. And then I think that the journey continues for this student because he's going to be going to college and also at home, I think he would like to continue standing once he's realized, you know, what he can do. I mean, I think that it's really unlocked a new potential for him. And it's also something that he can do more often if he isn't consistently going to therapy, which, you know, I did encourage. But yeah, so a piece of equipment allows the kind of like a therapist to be there when you're not there, and you can train staff or family members to assist the student to get into that piece of equipment and then do the exercise. So I think it's great to have the right piece of prescribed equipment. It makes a huge difference.
So Amy, you described that you were listening to his goals and his goals of walking. And as his therapist, you helped him understand what could be achieved and what couldn't be achieved. How was that process?
That's always a process that takes a lot of patience, especially on the part of the therapist, because a patient goes through a process of grieving before they come to acceptance and understanding. And you don't always see that patient all the way through that process. You know, sometimes there's, for whatever reasons, they give up in different ways, and that can come out, you know, in different ways. Sometimes it's anger towards you. A lot of times it's, or sadness, but it's also, it's a fine line of knowing that person. So learning how to communicate with them, helping them find hope, even if you're also making them aware of limitations, and then, you know, also finding out where they're at so that you can really emphasize their strengths as well. A lot of people, I mean, I think we're wired to focus on the negatives. And when you're delivering that negative, it's also making sure they know the positives and what is possible and what you're working towards, giving them realistic goals rather than, you know, giving them a goal that is much too high for them to accomplish at that time, because that will just lead to frustration and early termination of, you know, either of you, your services or of participation. So it's a way of like coaching and helping a patient come forward where they're at and take those steps needed to improve or to maintain while keeping in mind the safety concerns and limitations that they do have. And that's an important place, I think, for patients to be at, because, you know, in their whole life, they know themselves best, and they're the ones that are going to have to be working with their medical teams their whole life. So to be able to understand where you're at, explain to someone very confidently and in detail as needed, can only help them in their whole lifetime of interacting with their medical teams and getting the services that they need and want, and not asking under-asking and being reasonable about over-asking, you know, having a plan in place to go from where they're at to where they want to get to be. So it's an interesting skill that as therapists, I feel like any therapist, you know, occupational, mental, anyone, to help a person understand where they're at and to speak about that without fear, without shame, but very realistically to get what you need is an excellent thing that we can teach our clients.
It's almost like you're advocating to them for them.
Yes.
And trying.
You're showing them how it goes. Yeah.
So Amy, tell us a little bit about what the experience was like for the impact that this had on the student and his family and his classmates to see him be able to stand and accomplish such a hard-fought goal to be able to stand and go across the stage to get his diploma.
Yeah, so like I said, this student was the very first student to go across this new high school stage. And for him, I think it was the pinnacle of his entire high school experience. The smile on his face was just radiant. It was so bright. And he usually has, you know, he's a typical, not typical, but, you know, a teenager kind of like more sullen disposition, but he could not stop smiling. His smile when he got up on that stage, from when he got his diploma, and then when he came down and was standing with his peers, he actually stood through the entire graduation ceremony. You know, I had to really convince him to take a break and sit down, transition, you know, from standing to sitting. But he, you know, sat for like a few minutes and then he wanted to get right back up because for him, he had spent his entire high school career with his peers literally looking down on him because he was sitting in a wheelchair. He's wheelchair bound. So for him to be at their level and meet his peers where they were at and amidst the cheers of the entire school was everything. It was so worth all the hard work that he put into it, I'm sure. You know, in addition, his parents did not know that their son would be upright and standing and walking, propelling across stage, you know, and see them in the stands and hear their cheers. Like there was just tears streaming down the mother's face. And this father, the look of pride in his eyes when he shook my hand afterwards, it was amazing. They saw their son in a whole new light. They understood what it took for him to get to that level. And he, you know, he had a complex situation where they didn't think he would live past two. So for them to have a child that they had worried about all his life, to see, you know, this child who is accomplishing his goals and being
becoming a grown up.
Yes. Yeah. He was, you know, and it made a big impact too, that he was standing. I'm trying to find the right words to explain that because it's literally something that they had never seen him doing by himself. And they, you know, he was an adult now. They had seen him from, you know, when he wasn't able to crawl. So to see him so proudly standing, and this is all of his own effort, it really made a big impact. And it was interesting because the students around him were talking about, you know, going on to college and what their plans were, finding a job, et cetera. And, you know, I distinctly heard someone say, you know, I'm kind of like nervous about this, you know, going to college and da, 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 da. And then I heard somebody say, well, if you look at, you know, the student and what he just accomplished, I think that I'll be all right. I can accomplish great things too. So to see that social impact as well was just, for me, that was mind-blowing. That was heartwarming. That was, wow, we really do make an impact, not just with our client, but with everybody they come in contact with, you know, without always seeing that and hearing that. So it was really rewarding for me to hear, and also just to know that he was having such a large positive impact with accomplishing of his goals and having that, spreading that awareness and having that be shown that you can do things, you know, within reason, to really become a stronger individual and to advance along your own personal goals. So your own personal ability, excuse me. And besides, you know, knowing that it has a greater impact upon his quality of life going forward, those social emotional impacts were really impressive to see just by having someone who was wheelchair bound stand and walk across stage. I think it changed a lot of minds and perspectives. Well, at least I hope so.
Absolutely.
It was such an amazing experience. You were so lucky to be part of it, and probably the catalyst that made it happen. You should be rewarded yourself.
It definitely is going on my accomplishment list. It was something that, you know, came together at the right time, right place. I'm really fortunate to have participated in it.
Yes, absolutely. And there are several, you know, research studies that are available discussing the mental well-being and the socialization that comes from supported standing in both, you know, the pediatric populations and the adult populations. And by your client's experience of what it felt like to accomplish his goals, you also taught him a very unique skill of starting that process of learning how to advocate for himself. So tell me a little bit about what role does teaching your clients, you know, they see you advocating for them and their needs, but what role does teaching them how to advocate for themselves and their families how to advocate for themselves play in your practice?
Yeah, so like I was saying, it's a big thing to undertake. It's hard to do, but if they are able to kind of internalize that advocacy and that communication process, it can only help them. Where I am working right now, it's a middle and high school district, so we are preparing these students for adulthood. If you're a general education student and you graduate, you're going to be going off to college most likely. In the college setting, there's less of a team. In pediatrics, you generally have, you know, more support than when you become an adult. And then all of a sudden, you don't have, you know, in the school setting, you have an IEP team. In the medical setting, sometimes you have an organization like California Children's Services that help you to kind of case manage and guide you on your next steps and you know, how to get the equipment that you need, how to get the services that you need. As soon as you turn 18 for general education or 22 for more severe mod or mild population, you don't have those teams. So that client themselves now needs to be the generating voice for their concerns, for their disability and for their needs for their, you know, and they also need to be able to manage their caretakers. They'll probably have different care staff throughout their lifetime. They need to be able to instruct that staff and also educate them so that they can understand why. Because most people who are typically developing don't realize how different of an experience it is to have a disability. And so it's not something that they've ever thought about. And so it really is up to that client now to not only tell them what to do and how to do it, but also why and kind of like get into their thought process and teach them the reason why you go slowly when you have someone in, you know, in a Hoyer lift, for example, because they're in a swing, basically. They're going to be, you know, jostled about and swaying in the air. So it's telling people what to do and how to do it. But I think the why makes a big difference too, because then it kind of like helps them to understand the consequence of the actions. It actually makes it a lot safer if a person understands why and builds in some caution to their actions. Like you don't just flip someone on their side very quickly. That's very, very disorienting for the patient. You go at the speed that they're comfortable with. And it, of course, as a caretaker or as a care provider, it always does require a lot of patience. And it's very helpful if you're able to come from that patient-centered perspective. And so the responsibility of the patient is to be able to speak up for themselves and represent themselves to the caretakers so that we understand what they need. Because everybody's different, right?
They are. I know in my own past, trying to get families and individuals, if they're able, ready for the transition is a long process sometimes. Mm-hmm. Do you have a specific plan? Do you have some guidelines when you start talking to them, or does it just occur naturally within your setting as far as developing a plan for after
adult services when they leave the pediatric services, and the whole, as you said, the whole world changes. You don't have the care team. Right. You don't have the support staff that you had. We know that in some cases, the funding rules change because you're no longer a child or under the pediatric guidelines. Do you guys have a plan to do this, or what tips do you have for our listeners who are in the same situation?
Yes, yeah. So that's a great question. So yeah, definitely when a person, you know, comes of age, either they're 18 and getting a diploma from school-based, or they're 22 and aging out of the school system, everything is transitioning back to a medical-based model for them. So it does fall a lot upon a medical-based team to help prepare that student for transitioning into adulthood. I know that at CCS, when a patient turns 16, they begin that process. They begin helping them to understand that different functions will, you know, come back to them and their care team, or them, you know, solely. And so helping them to understand how that all transitions into their name, basically. From school-based, we start around middle school, like 14, 15 years old, in educating them on, you know, what's coming up with jobs. I do a lot of informational on adapted driving and education, you know, programs that they can do, because that's a big thing for high schoolers, is wanting to drive.
But all high schoolers.
Yes, they're just chomping at the bit for that independence. And then finding in the school-based setting, it also really helps the IEP team, as well as the family and the student, to find out the local resources that are available, such as local transportation, you know, connecting them with the student disability services at the colleges that they choose, and learning about, you know, other adapted participation, things that they can do as an adult, be it like adapted sports teams in the area, you know, local meetups and groups for families, connecting them with, you know, nonprofits. In our area, we have a regional center that is I think it's March of Dimes funded, and they assist with equipment payment or reimbursement, excuse me. But there's also other nonprofits like MBooks, Adaptive Trikes, things like that, just different resources that apply to the student in their local community or surrounding area that they can still take the onus to go and participate as an adult. And I think they have younger, you know, I think they have all ages, but particularly for my students, I look at kind of more of a young adult and adult participation criteria. So yeah, so we provide the resources. We aren't able to follow them for the rest of their life past graduation in school-based, but I do know that student becomes the hub of their care and their participation. So by giving them those resources, they can pull together their own personal team in a way, and personal connections, network of care, so that they can move forward and still, you know, participate at the level that they would like to. And as an adult, it's, you know, these things are difficult for any typically developing person too, is to keep up and push yourself. But you know, just lowering the threshold a little bit, and if possible, providing those to your patient really helps them out.
Yes, thank you, Amy. So there's a few things that we would like to leave with our listeners today. As you had mentioned about advocacy resources. So as a physical therapist, occupational therapist, a supplier, a family member, whatever your role is, there are a lot of different resources out there that are available to us to be able to help us in whatever place of advocacy we are at that time. And it's different throughout different times of our lives. So whether it is just a very small role of advocacy, all the way to I want to march on to Capitol Hill and raise my banner, there are many different ways to get involved in advocacy. So we're going to talk a little bit briefly about a few different resources. I know as a either new clinician or new to complex rehab technology, I didn't realize how much was available to us to help us with these efforts. We all know that supported standing devices are challenging to get depending on the region you live in, based on the funding resources that are available to the client, especially as they transition from pediatric to adulthood. So there are many organizations that are out there lobbying and fighting very hard to meet our clients' needs from a complex rehab technology standpoint. So very briefly, this is not by any means a comprehensive list, but there are a few organizations that you can visit their website for more information. But one is NCART, which is the National Coalition of Assistive Rehab and Technology. And they're a nonprofit organization of suppliers and manufacturers of complex rehab technology with a mission really just to educate and advocate to protect access to complex rehab technology for individuals who need it. Another resource is the Clinician Task Force. So this is specifically for physical therapists, occupational therapists, but it is a group of some of the nation's most experienced and expert seating and mobility clinicians that work together to improve access for consumers with complex medical conditions who require CRT needs. And they have a lot of resources on best practices and ways to fight for your clients' rights and needs on their website. Another one is INARTS, which is the International Registry for Rehab Technology Suppliers, which helps to set and maintain some of the high standards that our complex rehab technology industry has evolved in over the years. You know, many, many years ago, there weren't processes to how things were done from an industry standard. So there have been some major players in helping to develop some guidelines for us as clinicians and as individuals who utilize CRT. And then lastly is RESNA, which is the Rehab Engineering Society of North America. And RESNA's goal is to maximize the health and well-being of people with disabilities through technology. And they really help through public welfare, putting out scientific and literacy information for both professional and clinical resources, and really looking at it from a side to help individuals achieve the highest quality of life for all citizens, regardless of our mobility status. There are also diagnosis-specific groups that are out there. So if you are working with individuals like those with maybe cerebral palsy, there's a Cerebral Palsy Foundation. My area of background in spinal cord injury, organizations like the United Spinal Association. There are a lot of groups out there who are really fighting hard to gain access to better the quality of life for the individuals that we serve as rehab professionals. So if you get some time and you're interested, kind of wandering through some of those resources is a great way to find what place does advocacy fit in your world right now, because it changes and evolves throughout our careers. And there is never an amount that's too small. Any way, a form of fighting for your clients' needs is advocacy. So just keeping that in mind and knowing what available resources are there to help you along the way. You are not alone, and you do not have to do this alone as a PTOT or individual living with complex rehab technology needs.
Amy, I really want to thank you so much for sharing your journey, especially with this one client and all your clients in general, and learning to advocate for themselves and being an advocate for them, especially in the area of CRT. Is there anything else you want to add before we leave?
No, it's been great to be on the show. Thank you so much for having me here.
Well, thank you again for joining us and sharing your journey. Today we talked about how professionals can advocate for our clients, not only to get CRT, but also advocate for themselves to learn how they can do their own advocating and controlling their own world and their environment. I want to thank you, Amy, for sharing your personal success with both advocating for your client and assisting him in advocating for himself. I want to thank you all for joining us for this edition of Positioning 365 Beyond Seating. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Positioning 365 Beyond Seating. If you would like additional information on our products, please visit our website, www.ultimatemedical.com. That's ALTIMATEMEDICAL.com. Also on our website, you will find free on-demand CEU webinars, additional episodes of this podcast, and a schedule of upcoming in-person courses and live webinars. For any additional information about this podcast or any educational opportunities from Ultimate Medical, please email education@ultimatemedical.com. Again, I want to thank Amy for joining us today, And I want to celebrate Kristen joining us for the podcast and co-hosting in the future. And we look forward to seeing you all soon. Bye.
Bye.